Our presentation this month is ADA Complementary Paratransit Basics, which will introduce the ins and outs of a basic paratransit system as required under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Our presenter is Christy McLaughlin, Training and Technical Assistance Specialist with Easter Seals Project Action.
In the transportation industry, there are several modes of transportation that can or have been described as paratransit service. When I say paratransit today during this session, I'm going to be specifically talking about ADA Complementary Paratransit Service. So let's talk about what exactly it means to be an ADA Complementary Paratransit Service. According to the regulations, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act, each public entity operating a fixed route system shall provide paratransit or other special service to individuals with disabilities that is comparable to the level of service provided to individuals without disabilities who use the fixed route system. So when I say paratransit, I'm specifically talking about this comparable service to the fixed route that's required under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And by comparable, I'm talking about things such as comparable in hours of service, days of service, service area, fare, trip length, things like that. And we're going to talk about several of those areas as we go through the presentation today. This comparable service, as described, is ADA Complementary Paratransit. It is intended to be a safety net for people with disabilities, for those that are unable to ride the fixed route system. So now that we've kind of cleared up exactly what we're talking about today, the first big thing for us to go over is who is eligible for this service. Eligibility is determined by the nature of the system, which we just described, and any person that, because of his or her disability, is unable to access the fixed route services for that particular trip that he or she wants to take, is eligible for ADA paratransit service within the service area. The determination for eligibility should be based entirely on a person's functional ability with regard to riding the fixed route. The ADA specifies three categories of eligible persons for ADA Complementary Paratransit. Category one includes people with disabilities unable to use accessible fixed route services. Category two includes people with disabilities that can use accessible fixed route services, but the service that's provided isn't accessible. And category three includes people that are unable to get to or from the bus stop or station. The bottom line is whether or not the person with a disability can make the trip using the fixed route. That's really your baseline. For our next topic, I want to talk about the types of eligibility. There are three levels of eligibility that we want to focus on: unconditionally eligible, conditionally eligible, and temporarily eligible. So for the first one, unconditionally eligible, this determination should be made if it is not reasonable for the applicant to use the fixed route service for any of his or her trips under any and all conditions. So there's no reasonable expectation under any condition for that person to be able to take the fixed route. Conditionally eligible, this determination can be made if the applicant is able to use fixed route services under certain conditions, but not others. We don't have a lot of time to go into the very specific details that you can talk about with conditional eligibility. What I will say is that we have some past recordings of sessions on conditional eligibility on our website, which is projectaction.org. I would encourage you, if you're interested in listening or watching those recorded webinars, that you go there. You can also give us a call on our toll-free line, which is 800-659-6428, and ask any questions if we're unable to get into the specifics that you want to talk about today with regard to conditional eligibility. And then the final type of eligibility is to be temporarily eligible. This determination would be appropriate for a person whose disability is temporary or if his or her functional abilities are expected to change. And so generally, the term of eligibility for somebody that's temporarily eligible would be less than the other levels of eligibility. You can also have a person be unconditionally temporarily eligible or conditionally temporarily eligible, just depending on the applicant's abilities. And finally, it is possible for the agency to determine that someone is not eligible for paratransit service. this determination would be appropriate for applicants that can reasonably be expected to utilize the fixed route for any trip that they could request under any condition. And so, you know, based on the person's functional ability, if the agency determines that they're reasonably able to take the fixed route for every trip that they could request within the service area, then they can deny the eligibility for the applicant. All right, so let's talk about the eligibility determination requirements. So first, the regulations state that all information about the process, materials necessary to apply for eligibility, and notices and determinations concerning eligibility should be made in an accessible format upon request. And so this would obviously include things like Braille for people with visual impairments or electronic formats, large print, things like that. And we always suggest that you work with the person and find an alternate format that works for them. Next, during the initial 21 days after a completed application is submitted, the agency doesn't necessarily have to provide service to that person. So if a person applies, they have 21 days to work on that application without providing service. However, if the agency is unable to complete the application within the 21 days, then the applicant must be presumed to be eligible unless and until the applicant is found to be ineligible or denied service. And so as of the 22nd day of working on an application, the agency must provide presumptive eligibility, which pretty much means that they need to be provided service as if they were eligible unless and until the application is completed and denied if that were the case. Another regulatory requirement states that applicants must be notified in writing of the initial determination of eligibility. So if the applicant is determined not to be eligible or is denied eligibility, the written notification needs to list the reasons for the determination. And if the applicant is found to be unconditionally or conditionally eligible, then the notification needs to state specifically that the person is eligible and if they're conditionally eligible, what conditions under which are they eligible. So as a part of the eligibility process, there's also a requirement to provide appeals to certain determinations for eligibility. So an administrative appeals process must be available for those individuals who are determined to be ineligible for paratransit service, and that would be anybody that was denied service or any conditions that are placed upon eligibility as well. So let's talk about PCAs and companions, and this includes who is able to ride with an eligible passenger. PCAs are personal care attendants, and we'll talk about what that means in a second, and then obviously companions as well. A personal care attendant is a person that provides some type of service to a person with a disability that allows him or her to live more independently. This service doesn't have to directly be involved with riding a paratransit vehicle to be considered a PCA. So a person can be providing personal care assistance to a person with disability and not necessarily provide direct assistance in riding a paratransit vehicle. While this isn't always the case, PCAs are usually or at least sometimes paid to provide these services. They are usually either paid by the person with a disability, him or herself, or by an organization that person has worked with to obtain the PCA services. Transit agencies cannot charge a fare for a personal care attendant when he or she is accompanying an eligible passenger in that capacity. And then we often get this question, family, friends, and even possibly other paratransit eligible passengers can be PCAs if they are traveling with the eligible passenger in that capacity. So let's talk about companions. In addition to a PCA, passengers can also have companions ride with them. The agency is required to allow at least one additional companion to ride with the eligible passenger. So on any given paratransit trip, an eligible passenger could have two additional people riding with him or her, and that could be one PCA and one companion. However, paratransit passengers can request a ride for additional companions, and at this point, the transit agency can make a determination based on how much space is available on the vehicle. the agency can approve or deny the request for additional companions based on that space availability. A couple of points about companions. The transit agency can charge a fare to each companion that is the same fare charged to the eligible passenger. So, for example, if your fare for the eligible passenger is $2 one way, then each companion that's also riding would also pay $2 for that same trip. And then also the origin and destination for each companion should be the same as for the paratransit passenger. So the ride is for the paratransit eligible passenger, and the companion is just going along versus having the companion make a trip to a different location. Transit agencies can require that space be reserved in advance for PCAs or companions, just to make a note of that. So if you're scheduling your ride, the agency may ask you, do you plan to bring a PCA or do you plan to bring a companion so that they can plan ahead for that space availability. So let's talk about what rights eligible passengers have when they go on vacation or they visit places outside of their regular transit agency service area. The ADA doesn't specifically address how transit agencies should address visitors to their service area, but there are requirements for visitors when someone visits your transit agency service area. So a visitor is an individual with disabilities who does not reside in the jurisdiction served by the public entity or other entities with which the public entity provides coordinated complementary paratransit service within a region. This actually is spelled out in two different ways in the regulations. First, visitors that have been certified as paratransit eligible in another jurisdiction must be provided up to 21 days of paratransit service in your jurisdiction. And then visitors that claim to be ADA paratransit eligible must be provided presumptive eligibility, again, within your jurisdiction for 21 days. Presumptive eligibility would entitle the visitor to services as if they were fully eligible for those 21 days. For those that are claiming to be ADA paratransit eligible, the transit agency does have the right to request some documentation as to the place of their residence and the nature of their disability. The 21 days are not calendar days. This is sometimes a little bit confusing, but these 21 days may be spread out over many weeks. So if a person requests a trip on October 1st and then they request the trip on October 15th, that's 2 days of service, not necessarily 15 days of service. And then if visitors are in need of more than 21 days of service, which is what their right is, the agency at that point may require the visitor to go through the application process. All right, let's move on and talk about some of the details that explain the scope of paratransit service. This is where we're going to talk a little bit about some of those comparable things that I mentioned at the very beginning of the session. As was mentioned in the definition, the service must be comparable to the fixed route. And this means that it should run in the same locations and times as the fixed route runs. So if the fixed route starts on the west end of town at 5 a.m., then paratransit trip must also start in that area at 5 a.m. More specifically than just saying in that area, the regulations require that paratransit be provided within a 3/4 mile of the fixed route or 3/4 mile radius around rail or bus stations. Agencies can provide service to areas outside of these corridors, but the requirement is that they maintain at least a 3/4 mile radius at a minimum. For those who live outside of the area, anybody can apply for the service, and if determined to be paratransit eligible, they can travel to the service area and take a trip within the service area. So a couple of other points that get to the scope of paratransit service. Within the agency service area, agencies are required to provide service that is origin to destination. This can be a little confusing, and there are definitely we've received a lot of questions on what exactly it means to be origin to destination. The FTA has provided some guidance on this. Ultimately, what needs to happen to provide origin to destination service is that agencies need to first determine what their general level of service is. So is it going to be curb to curb or is it going to be door to door? And for anybody that may have a little question about the difference between the two of those, curb to curb would, of course, be picking up on the curb of the pickup location or the origin and dropping a person off on the curb of their destination. And then door to door would be picking a person up at the door of their origin and dropping them off at the door of their destination. And the ADA does allow agencies to determine which of these they use. But having said that, if an agency chooses curb-to-curb as their primary level of service, then they need to have a process or procedure in place to modify their policy and practice if a person with a disability needs to have door-to-door service because of their disability. So this is the guidance that's been provided by FTA. Of course, there are considerations that need to be made for safety. So if taking somebody to the door would cause a safety risk on the part of other passengers or the operator or things like that, then those types of safety risks can be considered when that request is made and should be considered. So it's possible that an agency may deny a door-to-door request, but it really does need to be considered on a case-by-case basis. And the general idea should be that if it's possible and it's not a safety risk, then if a person requests door-to-door service, it should be provided. Finally, transit agencies should not prioritize trips based on purpose. Every trip request should be given the same consideration in the scheduling process, whether they're going to a medical appointment or to work or for some recreation purpose. So it's very specific in the ADA that trip purpose or trip type cannot be considered when scheduling trips. So we'll talk a little bit about scheduling. Agencies can choose to schedule rides in advance. The ADA requirement, however, is that rides are provided at a minimum on a next day basis. So this is the case even if the agency's office isn't open the day before service is requested. So there has to be a minimum of next day service provided. When trip requests are being taken, the transit agency has the right to negotiate the passenger's pickup time by 1 hour before or after his or her request. And the key word here is negotiate. There actually should be a discussion with the passenger to determine an alternate pickup time within an hour before or after the original request if that original time is not available. Transit agencies can offer subscription service to passengers. Subscription service is a standing reservation for trips that are taken at the same time and day of the week, every week. Once the ride has been negotiated, if that's needed, and scheduled, then there will be a scheduled pickup time provided to the passenger. And this is based on how that passenger's trip fits within the trips already on the paratransit schedule for that day. And of course, as we know, the scheduled time doesn't always match up to the actual time. And so the driver can keep a record of the actual time so that on-time performance and other measures can be tracked by the transit agency. So that'd be the actual pickup and drop-off time. And then there's a window of time usually given to passengers that is so many minutes before and after the scheduled pickup time that the passengers should be ready to board the vehicles. Many pickup windows are around 30 minutes. So that'd be 15 minutes before and 15 minutes after. But ideally, the vehicle would show up during this window of time and the passenger would be ready to board the vehicle during the pickup window. In many cases, although it's not required, operators are instructed to wait a certain amount of time before leaving. And if the passenger does not show in that amount of time, he or she may be marked as a no-show based on the agency's policy. And policies about how long a driver will wait or other issues should be made available to the paratransit passengers so they know what's expected of them and can be fully prepared to ride the paratransit service.
We're grateful to Christy McLaughlin for providing this concise introduction to complementary transportation as required by the Americans with Disabilities Act. We hope this information will be helpful to those in our low-vision community who are in need of such a service. To find a paratransit service in your area specifically designed for the visually impaired, MD Support has created a national interactive database containing nearly 1,600 services in the United States. It's searchable by geographic location, and it documents the low-vision accommodations provided in each location. The database may be accessed at www.mdsupport.org/transportation/search.php. If you don't find your community in the database, you can help by filling in information about paratransit services in your area. Alternatively, you can help by encouraging your local transit authority to provide accommodations which may be lacking in your area, such as accessible, identifiable, and safe waiting areas, verbal identification of stops and destinations, tickets and schedules in Braille, door-to-door service, not just curb-to-curb, employees trained in needs of the vision impaired, assistance in boarding and off-boarding, availability, such as buses running at least every 30 minutes, adequate number of vehicles, adequate number and design of routes, adequate and convenient hours of operation, service during evenings and weekends, availability of intercity routes such as from town to town, fares and fees in line with local economy, allowances for short stops of less than an hour, and reliable on-time service. Ms. McLaughlin's presentation was provided by Easter Seals Project Action, whose mission is to promote universal access to transportation for people with disabilities under federal law and beyond. To learn about Project Action and their many outreach efforts, visit www.projectaction.org.